was smart enough to get some water at the 7 because I lost my voice at the 5 singing that. I always think, how else am I going to know my vocal range if I'm not led that well? And I often am finding my limitations with singing when Greg is leading. I don't know if you guys are. And I just want to make a point. I think that's great leading if you're not really lungfully challenged or something. Then, thanks. Really appreciate it. Hi, my name is Jeremy, and I'm going to give a talk primarily about Joseph, which I don't think happens a lot. I don't know why, but I don't really think about Joseph that much normally. And I'm talking about Joseph, Jesus' stepdad, not Joseph, the dreamer whose bones were brought up out of Egypt. Although this Joseph also came up out of Egypt, and there's actually a lot of parallels between those two, but that's for another night. None of that was written down here, by the way. I'm gonna go back here. It's just improv. The main thing I want to talk about tonight is the problem I'm having. And I'm going to have a couple of disclaimers and a couple of warnings before I have the problem. The problem I'm having is mixed with fear and hope. Can I tell you my problem? Do you want to hear my problems?
Yes.
I have not a lot of friends who don't want to hear my problems anymore, but I want you to hear this problem. But before I tell you, here's a disclaimer before you hear my problem. I don't want to ruin Christmas for you. I really don't. So that might come off that way, but I don't want to do that. I don't think I'm going to anyway. Who could ruin Christmas? The reason I want to tell you about my problem is because I don't want to stay in my problem. I want to name the problem I'm having so it doesn't have any more power over me, so I can move on to liberation. Just a warning, and I guarantee this is the last warning. I'm going to use the word liberation about 30 times tonight. I did a word count in my talk. There's 30 times. So if that's annoying to you, I'm sorry. And it's a capital L in all the places I have it. So that's what we're going for tonight. If you don't take away anything with the way I talk, just take away the word liberation, because I think that's the primary movement God is talking about when he breaks through the veil of the universe to become a little baby. So I want to talk about hope and fear. My hope is that during Advent, which is where we're at, that this is a season where we wait for God to break into our history. My hope is that God is inviting us to actively participate in the next chapter of his ongoing liberation project, meaning it didn't stop when Jesus was born or when Paul wrote all those letters. We're kind of in the midst of the next chapter now. Here's my fear. This might be yours too, but after the 5, I got the impression that it's only mine. So if that's the case, I think that's fine. But here's my great fear. My fear is that the sentimentalized season that we call Christmas time, that's one word, that is a word that Microsoft Word recognizes as a word, by the way. Okay, so that means it's actually a word. Christmas time, with a capital C. Christmas time is more attractive than Christmas or Advent. This is my fear. I'm afraid we're too corrupted by a surrounding culture to hear and recognize God's invite to liberation, mostly because of, and this is my thing, because of songs like this that are super catchy that I like, until then I read the lyrics, and then I realize how corrupted I am. I just want to put it out there that I think you're going to disagree with me, but I disagree with you already if you disagree with me, but let's just do it anyway. Okay. I said that was the last warning, and that wasn't. I'm going to read the lyrics, and we'll see if you can guess the song, and then we're going to play it. It's Christmas time. There's no need to be afraid. At Christmas time, we let in light, and we banish shade. Zing. In our world of plenty, we can spread a smile of joy. Throw your arms around the world at Christmas time. It's pretty good so far. It's not bad, right? But say a prayer. Pray for the other ones at Christmas time. It's hard, but when you're having fun, there is a world outside your window. And it's a world of dreaded fear. Where the only water flowing, is a bitter sting of tears. And the Christmas bells that ring there are the clanging chimes of doom. Well, tonight, thank God it's them instead of you. And there won't be snow in Africa this Christmas. There won't be snow in Africa this Christmas. The greatest gift they'll get this year is life, where nothing ever grows, no rain or rivers flow in Africa. I just want to make a point. Nothing ever grows in Africa. No rain or river ever flows in Africa. Do they know it's Christmas time at all in Africa? Here's to you, raise your glass for everyone. Here's to them underneath that burning sun. Don't they know it's Christmas time at all? Feed the world and let them know it's Christmas time. Feed the world. Just so you know, I'm not making this up. I couldn't make that up. Let's hear it from the Band-Aid. I remember this. I remember being in grade school. I just want to make a point, too. This is also one of my favorite Christmas songs. This is how torn I am about this song. Paul Young, who I don't know. Shade, because Shade's so bad. You know him, right? Boy George. Phil Collins. There's nothing wrong with Phil Collins playing the drums. That's awesome. But George Michael, who does not get along with Boy George. They fought the whole recording, by the way. It's true. I mean it. Simon Le Bon, who I also don't know. It's the world of dreaded fear. A young Sting. Sting of tears. I don't think that was an accident. Bono, right? And this is where it all falls apart for me. That's good. I could keep listening. It kind of gets better. It gets even more patronizing because it's a lot of footage of all the stars from Britain and Ireland at the time. She had come to do this like 24-hour recording where they wrote and recorded the song. I just want to make a point. I think the idea was actually pretty good because they're raising funds for, at the time there was a famine in Ethiopia in 1984. And they raised like millions and millions of dollars for this. But I think it's a little, like, I kind of hate it now. And so I really am this conflicted. You're probably wondering why I would hate this. I think, and this is, Paul talks about this in Corinthians, but even the adversary comes dressed as an angel of light. This is my harsh criticism of this whole thing. The worst part is that they got Bono to sing that awful lyric. Thank God it's them instead of you. Different people interpret that differently, but I think it's incredibly patronizing. And I think Bono spent the rest of his life serving Africa as a way to repent. Again, I'm not trying to ruin Christmas for you, I'm just trying to ruin maybe Christmas time. I get really mixed up this time of year, so songs like this are confusing for me because I really like to sing them, but the message has really jacked up my brain. So when I think of a manger scene, like the Little Drummer Boy's the other one that really jacked me up because the ox and lamb are there kind of keeping time, you know? And that's real weird for me because I don't think they can do that. The baby, there's a supposed European drummer there who's playing the drum for Jesus who Mary, having given birth 2 hours ago, is like, yeah, I'm cool with this, man. And Jesus smiles, which is impossible for a two-hour-old to smile. Unless maybe that he's God. This is what really messes me up about Christmas time. I start to see like Frosty the Snowman's hanging out. Like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer is around the back just kind of chilling out. And the whole thing is this mishmash of just, and that's Christmas time. And if you're feeling as confused as I am, welcome to my brain. But welcome to the Christmas time. We're going for Advent and we're going for liberation. So that is my hope is that we can sing the song even and just let it be what it is, but we're moving closer to Jesus towards liberation. My hope is that we can even sing in the song with Bono, who I really did think redeemed him. He redeemed himself big time from that. But my hope is that we can stand in solidarity with those who are suffering around us without patronizing them. I want to break free from the grip of this sort of fake happiness and get back on track with God's liberation project. What I want to talk about for the rest of the night is how I think Joseph, Jesus' stepdad, how I think he does this so well and how he teaches us to do this. He demonstrates in Matthew's version of Jesus' birth story that the word we need to hear from the Lord comes to us in really challenging moments if we have the ability to dream. So this season, I'm relating big time to Joseph. I've never really done that before. I just want to make that exclusion. We're both new fathers in a dominating political climate. We're both carpenters. We both have laid before us the choice of life or death. And what I mean by that is the choice to keep relating to and relying on God or to rely on our own logic for family welfare, for family sustenance, and for family security. And most of all, we're both highly unlikely candidates to be active players in God's liberation project. Most of you know I had a kid 11 weeks ago. I think he's here. Is he here? There he is. Little Marcus Eben. That's Jenna raising her hand. And day one of fathering went something like this. So after going through 2.5 years of trying to have a baby, the 9 months of pregnancy, and 33 hours of natural childbirth, which I just want to point out was largely Jenna. I think we all realize that, for the most part. Leanne and I were there too, though. Jenna and I joyfully came home with Marcus and put him to sleep between us. We have this cool little co-sleeping arrangement, which I've really fallen in love with. And Jenna duly passed out. And I don't think you had really slept in days at that point or something. It was pretty wild. And the week before, you had spilled bleach in your eye on top of that. So it was time to go to bed. It's pretty wild. That's another story. I was also exhausted. But there we were, a happy little family. But that's when the fear gripped me. What if something happens to him? He's on my watch, is what I couldn't stop thinking. I kept watching his breathing to make sure he was okay. It was really a terrifying moment. And if something happened to him, it would definitely be my fault. So I couldn't sleep. I paced and paced, and I was just terrified of losing him, and it was totally irrational. But it was very real. So I was really lost track of time then, so you can probably correct me, but it was about 2 a.m., and the only thing I could think to do was call Leanne, who was our birth partner, who was really, you know, that level of intimacy. I knew she wouldn't, I've known Leanne for like 15 years, so I knew she wasn't going to judge me, and she would just listen, but mostly just help me through it. So Leanne talked me down, and she essentially put me down to sleep over the phone. Without her, I would not have gotten to sleep that night. The huge lesson for me was that I had to let go. I had to give Marcus's well-being to God who made him. That's not to say I don't have a totally active role, obviously, in parenting him, but part of that is letting go and letting God be a part of that and getting some sleep, too. That's like a really important part of it, which didn't happen that much after that. This is a part of my talk where I need you to make a leap with me, like a leap. It's not really a leap of faith, but I need you to help. I'm seeing a lot of connections. You might not see this, so, again, a disclaimer. But I keep seeing these natural gas company propaganda ads on TV lately. Have you seen these? The ANGA, the American Natural Gas Association, or ConocoPhillips, or things that are generally promoting hydraulic fracturing in the Marcellus Shale as like a really beneficial thing so that we're going to have energy independence. There's a slew of these on TV, particularly early in the morning when all the political talk shows are on. And I've never watched TV at that time, but being up with Marcus, I just see them all. And none of those shows ever even touch the subject of fracking, which is such an important issue right now, whether you're for or against it. And they won't even touch the subject. And then, of course, all the commercials are from the American Natural Gas Association. So that's why they won't touch it, because they're being paid by them. So I see these on TV, and the reason I'm bringing them up, and this is the leap I want you to make with me, is that they tap into a basic instinct that I think most people have, but particularly I'm feeling that fathers have, and that is an instinct to provide. The shadow side of this good instinct to provide is to worry that your family won't have enough, and then you'll want an excess stored up so you'll never be in want. I think the Natural Gas Association knows this, and they're trying to tap into my brain, so I'll go along with their foolproof fracking methods to gain energy independence. God doesn't want us to be independent of want from him, and I don't think it's ever good to dig that deep for anything anyway. What happens every time when we dig that deep? That's right. Every single time we dig that deep, this guy shows up. I mean, just as a side note, I tried to put a Santa hat on him, but it was too difficult in Photoshop. But digging that deep for greed because we're afraid that we're not going to have enough for our family, this is really, these commercials tap in, and that's why they're propaganda. They tap into these core fears. And I think the dwarves had these core fears too. Well, they were mostly about greed and shiny stones in the books. But again, when we're digging that deep for something, we're always going to have unintended consequences. And I think we all forgot that the BP gas, or the oil spill in the Gulf. Do you remember the live footage of like an oil plume 70 miles high shooting in the, we just forgot that. I mean, personally, I don't ever think about that. That was like the wildest stuff. That's what happens when we dig deep. This guy shows up from the ancient world. I think it's best to listen to Gandalf and to not go there. And I think Joseph is modeling another way. I don't think we should stay shallow, but I think the thing Joseph is proposing is to dig deep inside of us the way God intended us to. So I think when we're talking about going deep, we have it wrong. We need to go into ourselves where he indwells us, where God indwells us, and we need to hear his direction, whether we're awake, or particularly for Joseph, when we're sleeping. So check out this basic reorienting theme of the Christmas story from Ched Myers. This is, I think, is in direct opposition to that junk that Bono was talking about. God slips quietly into a world of brutal rulers and hard-pressed refugees, and a few unheralded people manage to recognize him and act accordingly. One of those brutal rulers was the half-Jewish king Herod, who instituted what today would be called a police state, complete with the loyalty oaths, surveillance, informers, secret police, imprisonment, torture, and brutal retaliation against any serious dissenter. So this was the political climate that Jesus was in, and Mary and Joseph, and I think particularly that Joseph was trying to get his family away from. Our little holy family, they're at the top of King Herod's list of serious dissenters, like the very top of his list. Somehow these nobodies made it to that list immediately. Well, not somehow. The Magi had something to do with that. If they're going to survive and help to usher in the incarnation, they're going to need some help. If you follow Matthew's account of the birth story, the help comes in three dream sequences where Joseph is redirected from the adversary's grip and positioned to bring the liberation project to its next act. So I'm going to throw this up here, and I want to invite you to read it if you want to. Don't feel like you have to. You can also notice the colors, the theme I got going there. It's a Christmas time theme. These are the three dream sequences in Matthew's account. I want to make another point really quickly. Matthew's account of the birth story doesn't reconcile very well with Luke's account of the birth story. Neither do the genealogies of, like, Jesus. That's for another time, but if you're wondering why they don't, I don't know, we can probably talk afterwards, but I think it's really interesting, and I think it points to maybe how we might want to consider reading the Bible is not necessarily this, like, reconcilable set of documents, but like narratives to different people groups that were getting the general gist of the story. That really freed me up when someone told me that, so maybe it will for you. It might just make you mad. I think there's a lot happening here, and I'll leave this up here if you want to read it for a bit. But the main point is this: in all three of these big movements, in an extremely challenging and life-threatening time, the angel who is coming to Joseph in these dreams is very clear and very directive in each dream, and Joseph is immediately trusting and responsive. And the pieces I've highlighted are the sort of actions that are happening. So in the red, it's the angel, and in the green, it's what Joseph is doing. So even in the first dream sequence, you've got the angel saying, you know, do not be afraid to take, give, And Joseph is, he does. He takes. He gave. He gives. In the second one, the angel comes and says, get up, take, escape, stay. And Joseph, he got up, he took, he left, he stayed. And in the third one, the angel says, get up, take, go. Joseph got up, he took, he went. He was afraid to go, he withdrew, he went. So peppered all throughout these angel visits, which are happening all the time in this story, it's very active. I think it proves that God wants to be in the middle of what's happening in our story, but I'll get to that in a minute. Joseph takes himself seriously enough to listen, and I think that's not something we should brush over. He shows us how to receive and act on God's direction in extremely challenging situations. I think he's tempted to not to at every turn, and I might be using a little creative license here, like the Bible writers, but I'm going to go for this. His great temptations, and the first one's obvious, are to divorce Mary quietly, to shut down the incarnation, to halt the liberation project in its tracks. I don't think he realizes he's doing that, but he's trying to do the right thing, and he wants to divorce Mary quietly. I think the second temptation is he wants to stay in Egypt, away from the obvious and imminent danger to his family, which would make sense to me. And if I was him, I think the third temptation is he wants to go back home to a home that's different from where the prophets would place him. This might seem like a minor point. I think it's a huge point. He wants to go back home to a place that makes sense, which is Judea. The prophets from the Old Testament place him in Nazareth. The angels redirect him at that point. They want him to be in Nazareth, and I don't think that's a small point. Matthew is particularly making this point to his people, reconnecting this little factoid to the entire history of his people group. This whole thing is part of a much larger narrative, which gets back to the genealogy, which we're not really going to talk about too much tonight. But it's not just about another town. Nazareth is a very important place that Jesus has to come out of, and it almost didn't happen. All along the journey, he wants to use his instincts to stay alive, Joseph, that is. And most of the time, I think his instincts are really good. I mean, he's a carpenter. So from being one, I think building teaches you really good instincts. Pete's smiling. It's true. God steps in only to redirect and use Joseph's natural abilities at certain points. Joseph gets this nudge while he's asleep here and there from the angels, but that's all he needs. Otherwise, Joseph is the active participant in the liberation work at hand. But God doesn't always win. God doesn't always win, as is seen with the slaughter of the innocents by King Herod, this moment where Herod just freaks out and kills arguably thousands of children under 2 years old trying to get at the top people on his list of dissenters. The hard lesson learned here is this. The powers are threatened when the Jesus followers dream and take direction from God. And the work of liberation demands a costly price. We need to keep dreaming together if we're going to make it to the next leg of the race and hand off the baton or the torch or whatever metaphor you need to the next person, the next generation of people who are going to keep carrying on the work of liberation. Like I've been saying so far, I think Joseph was extremely open to the work of liberation. I think those opportunities to dream and liberate for us are everywhere if we're developing eyes to see and ears to hear. God clearly demonstrates through the incarnation that he wants to weave our human history into his. I think there's a point to make that God doesn't really exist in our history. He has his own thing going on and that I don't always understand. And sometimes he enters into our history, and sometimes I think he's just at rest watching us do our thing, if you will. I'm still working with that idea, so we can probably talk about it in the talk back. I just want to tell two quick stories about how I see that, where how God is working out liberation stories in my life right now. And then I want to close this up. I'm doing okay on time. As many of you know, I teach a freshman level design class at Philadelphia University. And my students' work is out in the lobby, these interesting lights. My dream has always been to weave my worlds together, to be able to connect my students and their friends and family to God through Circle of Hope or other means. And we got that chance this year when we put together this show of their final projects that take, basically the assignment was pick a unit of industrial production, which is a fancy way of saying, find something that you would normally throw out that is really well designed, like a straw with a little bendy part, or a staple, or a paperclip. Yes, these things have had thousands of person hours put into them, and we throw them out all the time. So it was about awareness, it was about repurposing trash, it had a lot of undercurrents to it. They had to study this thing and figure out what was true about it. What made it that thing that was nothing else? And they really took it on. And then they had to reimagine it in a way in multiples to make an illumination device. And I thought they did a really good job with it. But the real work of transformation came through the students themselves. The basic idea of the show that we had, this celebratory show, wasn't to highlight their good work. It was meant to be, for me, it was an affront to the deconstructive critique culture that dominates university-level education. And what I mean by that, when I say deconstructive, is generally at any university-level education that involves a creative thing, the idea is to deconstruct the student, to break them down into their constituent parts. This is postmodernism at its best. Hopefully, they would get built back up with the next professor. I can tell you from experience, that just never happens. It just doesn't happen. It's just breakdown, 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 breakdown. And then you're thrust into the world with tons of student loans that you can't pay back and a job you can't get with a job you're not qualified for, if there's a job at all. So part of my teaching philosophy is sometimes I want to convince my students to drop out. Sometimes, which would make me lose a job, the rest of the time I just want to make them understand that they have to do really, really good work, that's important, and they have to try really hard, but we have to celebrate their lives, too. We have to celebrate how amazing this is that we get to do good work, and that's what this was about. So I wanted to create a place where my students could be built up and not broken down, but mostly for the Spirit of God to do some work with them. What's cool was they all brought their family and friends, and we all ate pizza bagels and ramen and Totino's pizza rolls, and we celebrated our lives together. The coolest part was that they were blown away that 100-some people would come to see their work, and they all kept asking me, how do you know so many people? And I'm just like, I'm older than you, okay? Like, I've met some people. You know, they it was so cool to see their world open up and to meet all these people they'd never met. They thought it was really cool that people would want to see their work and get to know them. It was really meaningful for them. And all we had to do was create a safe place for the Holy Spirit to do the connecting. I thought the coolest part was at the end of the night when people just kind of hung around after we were over. A couple of the students and their families, they kind of didn't want to go. And they wanted to know what happened here. So Neil Jordan, who's just the consummate diplomat, he's such a good person to help people get into the mix, and he's telling them about Kensington Connect Sculpture Derby, which blew their gourds that this would actually happen. They have never heard anything like this. That we would do this every month, and that it's rotating. They were like, what? So they want to come back to see other stuff. They're like really into the thing that like personally, I take for granted a lot. You know, I have this, I'm in. But they want to get in, and I thought that was really cool. So why do I do this? Because it's my life that God cares about using, and I don't want to compartmentalize it in a way that would hamstring his liberation work. So if you're like me, you would have a work life, and like a home life, and like a church life or something like that, and I think that's like where we're driven by the world is being deconstructed, and I'm trying to mash those together, like the manger scene maybe with Rudolph or something. So that would be a healthy mashup to where you just can't tell where, you know, your church life or work life begin and end. It's just the life you're living, and it's liberating. One more story, and then we'll be done. Most people I know are looking for democratic fairness, and I want to say that that's okay. But we are going for liberation. Jess Schaffner and I went to an urban agriculture and vacant land use forum last Wednesday night in my neighborhood. Is Shafi here? I don't know if I saw her. I don't think so. All the heavy hitters in the local urban farming movement were right there. and it was a great place to talk about the new bill being proposed to transform the current laws surrounding vacant land uses. The hardest part about the meeting was when we talked about the new bill, which hasn't passed yet, and we talked about how lackluster it was in terms of what it allows urban farmers to do and not do. And particularly what was hard was how disappointed and shocked many of the people were at how little public discourse there was and how pushed around they all felt. Like, the bill basically stinks. And it might lock us in for the next 10 years for a really crappy policy for urban ag. In a word, there was outrage. But then there was hope. Two of the people leading the meeting, who were from this organization called FORC, which is Food Organizing Committee, they kept reminding us that we were in the throes of an important movement, and that this time was ripe with hope, and that liberation was near. And this is what got me thinking about liberation. The mood of the room totally changed. One of the leaders, this young guy, Chris Bolden Newsom, kept using this word, liberation, to describe the work of urban farming and land redistribution. And he really turned the whole thing around. It was great. When the meeting was done, I went up to him, and I just kind of laid this out. And I want to tell you, I don't do this that often. I'm a pretty extroverted guy, but I'm usually terrified to talk about portions of my life where I feel like I'm going to get rejected. I resonated like with people at the Five about this, where I don't want to be rejected. I don't want people to think I'm weird or stupid, even though I think I'm both. So I introduced myself to him, and I just asked him, and I said, you know, when you talk about liberation, do you mean liberation theology, like God liberating his people and his creation from oppression and bondage? Because that's what I'm hearing you say. And it was an awkward pause, I gotta say. And he said, I didn't know what he was going to say, but the cool part was there was a pause because his eyes just lit up, and he was so happy. Yes was his answer. That's exactly what he's talking about. So I heard exactly what he was saying, and it was a really wonderful moment. And we talked for 20 minutes, and he told me that I'm the first believer that he's met since he moved to Philly over a year ago. And he's been looking. Do you get that? How weird that is? He's in a liberation movement looking for Jesus, and he can't find it. The conclusion we came to was at the end of the day, the end goal of urban agriculture, gardening, land redistribution, vacant land issues, all this stuff that's getting dredged up, which is really good. The end goal isn't necessarily about food justice or food or teaching people how to grow things or fairness or a democratic process with the powers. That stuff is all good, but that is moving us towards liberation as a people. And it was that's where people want that kind of hope. If we're just focusing on the vehicle as the goal, we're never going to get to liberation. We can do all the food justice work we want, and it's wonderful, but that isn't the goal. It's the vehicle. So when we can remain focused on God wanting to use us in the fight for liberation, we don't get too tweaked when the powers draft shoddy legislation, don't listen to us, or straight up lie, which is exactly what they did. In fact, at this point, I kind of expect that nonsense, and it doesn't bother me. We keep running the race with our eyes on Jesus. And by the way, Chris Bolden Newsom is going to come to check out Circle of Hope when he gets back from D.C., because he couldn't believe such a place like would exist. And he was looking. I just want to make that point. So people are looking. And let me close this up with a quote from one of my favorite authors, a man named Jacques Ellul, from a book called Anarchy and Christianity. And he writes, primarily here he's writing about the nature of God. When the human situation becomes desperate, God devises a plan of rescue. This may not always succeed, for we humans have to take part in it, and we may fail. What is hardest to understand if we are used to traditional concepts of God is the intermingling of human history with God's history. This brings us to a central notion. Far from being the universal commander, the biblical God is above all the liberator. So if anything happened tonight, I want you to leave this building with some sense of hope. God wants you to be liberated, and he wants us and he wants to use us to help him liberate others. It's not that complicated. You know who those people are, and you know each other, and you know who needs a little bit of liberation. So here are two ways this season that I think are just really kind of softball pitches, like easy ways to do that, and to also just let God do most of the work. One, make a list of people in your life who aren't part of your faith community that you want God to liberate. Pray for them daily and ask them. One idea is just straight up ask them to come to your cell. Tell them like what you do. Say, do you want to check this out? That might not make sense for everyone geographically, you got to use some discernment there like Joseph does. And try to see opportunities for liberation in the people groups you connect with. Try to see it everywhere. And then the second one is on January 7th. We're having this month. We have our monthly training for our leadership team, but this time it's a seminar. It's a new thing we're trying out, and it's called the Year of Incarnational Evangelism. And it's followed up by our yearly council meeting. That's the high point of the four-month-long collective dreaming process we have every year to try and listen together for what God wants us to do the next year, which is, well, maybe the high point was the soup and bread dinners, which I thought were amazing, but this is where we kind of seal the deal and celebrate it and figure out what we're doing next year. So that's at 9 a.m. at 19G, and I invite you personally to be a part of the Liberation Project here in Philadelphia and South Jersey and beyond. So let's take a minute to pray, and then we have a couple minutes to do some talk back if you want to say something back to me, and then we'll have two other things and be done. So let's pray. God, thank you for being the great liberator in our lives and beyond. We're taking your lead. We're listening when we're awake and we're asleep, and we're excited to do the next act of liberation that you're calling us into. Give us what we need to hear from you and to see those opportunities. In your name we pray. Amen. So we might have like 5 minutes or so for some talk back if you wanted to say something back to me or defend like Bono or something like that. I would understand. Or not. This could be a time of silence. Jordan. Sure. Danielle.
I guess I was kind of thinking something along those lines this morning, but there's this guy who, this sailor, gruff man, who comes into the tea room sometimes, and I've seen a few years with the Rocket Cat, and we have sort of like a funny little like...
Like he's really a sailor?
Project. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
He works on the Gazella, the ship that's down on the Delaware. Yeah, there's a lot of sailors in Philadelphia. Talking, and he's like super like kind of like a trippy dude, like half the time like I just kind of nod and go, yeah, totally, like trying to feel some sort of like just like what he's trying to say, kind of like filling the blanks. But
people talk to me that way all the time.
Yeah. Well, they were talking about like Santa Claus or like this time of year or something, and he was saying something like, yeah, you know, just like going out there, like people come from different places, different things that they're feeling around this time of year. Like all this other stuff, but he was like, yeah, man, yeah. And I was like, well, just, you know, keep believing. He was like, I think that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm trying to believe in something. I don't know what it is yet, but I want to believe. And I was like, all right, dude.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was great.
That's exemplary. That's great.
Yeah.
Jody, and then Mike, did you raise your hand? Okay. Good man. Isn't Mike great? Oh, that guy.
There's just a lot of sparks that you said. Like,
It's about Bono, isn't it?
No, it's really not.
It's a terrible song, Jody. I can't defend it. I won't.
It's a horrible song. No, I'm thinking about Christmas time, like, how, like, all of, I'm with you. Like, I get so many different feelings about it. Like, I was raised Jewish, but also celebrating Christmas.
Sure.
But actually, for, like, the first 10 years of my life, didn't know it was about Jesus at all.
Hmm.
Like, I had no idea. Anyway, I thought, so, like, I'm more used to Rudolph than all those guys. But I always have all these mixed, like, feelings, because people would always, you know, I am, first of all, I get really, like, angry when people get so, I don't know if you know anybody like this, but whenever we had to sing songs in choir that weren't Christian or Christmas, like, or play in orchestra, things that weren't Christmas, like, people would be like, it's Christmas, everybody should celebrate Christmas, it's
sure.
Christmas time. And it's not really the point of, like, Christmas time and Christmas are very, like, weird, different.
Yeah, it's
like,
mixed up.
Jesus is, like, a different concept to me than Christmas.
Yeah.
Christmas means something completely different still. And, like, my whole life has meant something different. So, it's like Jesus means a lot more to me than Christmas.
Mm. I think I want to say something quick to that, because you're bringing up a really good point, Jody, and that's that I am not trying to be one of the people who's like, let's put Christ back in Christmas. That stuff drives me nuts, because it really does, and because I think it's an instructive moment about how mixed we are, and we can just let it be a little mixed up. I don't think trying to make it right, God is with us. I don't think we're trying to just make the season correct. I think that's missing the point. Like, my favorite songs this time of year are Donny Hathaway's This Christmas with the horns.
Yeah.
Thank you. And Mariah Carey's, what is it? All I want for Christmas is you. And I'm like, maybe that's funny, but I'm telling you, man, I don't think there's anything wrong with, like, really getting down and having, like, being really happy when you sing a song like that with your family and loving each other. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
I just don't like... Yeah, it's complicated and nuanced.
There's so many things, so many complicated.
I mean, sometimes it's fun to just put BO101 on and just let it go. Do you not do that? I just have it on all day, all day. Maybe that's Frankie. You want to, and then, yeah.
Come up with something or a new idea or something, they're like, oh, that's the devil or that's whatever.
Yeah.
That doesn't even make sense. But then when you make it happen, they're like, oh, that's cool. You're benefiting from this? You know what I mean? So it's
sure.
like you just got to use wisdom, you know, not to send other people mixed messages, though, because, like, I've tried it once. You know, I was on the roof with some of the guys. We were just hanging out. And then, you know, we were just chilling. They were laughing at all my jokes. They love jokes.
Because you're funny.
And then I tried to bring Jesus into the conversation. And he, like, got up and walked away. So this got weird. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because it was a mixed message. It wasn't
sure.
the time for it.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
Like, as far as, like, mixing it up and, you know, filling it out or just, you know, different worlds, you know, work, church. You know, it creates a good, healthy balance. You know, you're not just focused on missionary work.
Sure.
When it comes to something else, and it's like, oh no, it's not missionary. You know, that's when people like collide and bump heads. So I just want to encourage you on, you know, living in your different worlds and trying to mesh them all together. You
yeah.
know, it's difficult, but you know, it's possible.
Thanks, Frank. We're trying to be the church. You know, we keep saying this, and I think it's a relentless discipline to be the church and not just kind of keep going to it or something. And there's some other hands, but I'm going to get in a lot of trouble if we keep talking. We're keeping you here so late because I talked a little long. So bring this conversation to your cell groups. That would be the next logical thing. And Danielle, are you coming up now? Danielle is going to lead us in a time talking about what's going on in and around our community. Thank you, friend.
I am Danielle. I'm going to lead us in vision time. And I was just going to say that Mariah Carey song, I was in choir. I wanted to sing it so bad, but Miko, <Just kidding. laughs> But I wanted to sing that song so bad in choir, but I didn't get picked. I was so jealous. Anyway, that's all. So yeah, while I'm talking, there's some slides. It seems like they were just running really fast, but they're going to keep running behind me. And while I am speaking, if we could get the welcome list at the end of the row and fill them out, leave some contact info so we can make a further connection. And our programs this week, hopefully you got one when you came in. It has lots of information in here, all the cell leaders and places, neighborhoods where we meet, and how you can contact and get in touch with someone if you want to join a cell. Also, there's info about upcoming events and people to pray for on the back. There's prayer requests. And is it still true that if you do have a prayer request, you can put it in the common fund box? So yeah, if you're wondering, like, if you have something that is like, I would like to be praying for this and have the community pray for it, you can let us know by putting it in the common fund box. And you can also, if you want to share money with our community, can put in the common fund as well. At the info table, that black box that is highlighted, common fund. And there's also more things over there. Looks like there's a few Bibles there if you, or maybe someone you know needs a Bible, or you can check out more info that we have over there. But yeah, so I am hosting tonight because I'm a cell leader, and we have been taking time to share what maybe God is doing in our cell, our cells. And I wanted to just kind of highlight how just beyond just like the good times to get together and encourage each other, I just really enjoy like the connections and the sort of like fun things that come out of meeting as well. And I was going to highlight my cellmate and friend Jillian. And 1 week she brought does anyone in here know kefir, what kefir is, or kefir, however you want to say it? people say it different ways. But she brings in these like mason jars with these like water ones and milk ones, and I've like seen it in Trader Joe's or whatever. But so we're all trying these like cultured drinks, be it in milk or water. And it was just like a really amazing time in our cell. We were all kind of like, some were like a little nervous, and other people were like, you made this at home? How did you do this? Bring me some. And so she's like, okay, next week just bring like a jar or something to take it home, and I'll bring you these grains, which look like cauliflower. They're like white, totally crazy, science experiment, to do at home. But it was just like one of those moments where I was like, man, cells are awesome. It's not just like, it's totally about encouraging each other and about learning together and sharing together and being very like, just with each other in hard times and praying together, but it's also about like sharing things like kefir grains or kefir grains. So I just wanted to share how I think that's really amazing. And also there's a few things I wanted to highlight. I thought I would pay attention to maybe things that are coming up very soon. So this year I can actually attend and be part of the Christmas Eve network-wide vigil at Broadham, Washington. It's going to be from 10:45 to midnight. And I think it's just I've never been. So I think it'll be just a great way to, like, connect to our community even more and have that sort of, like, togetherness feeling and be together during, like, a very family-driven time of the year. And also on Christmas Day, there's just going to be one public meeting at 6 p.m. It'll be here. And the congregation from 19th and Girard will be joining us as well. And then another thing with this holiday season, but for New Year's Day, there's a potluck at 5 p.m. here if you want to bring something to share and bring an appetite too. We'll have our meeting also at 6 p.m., just one, instead of a 5 and a 7. Is there anything else that anybody wanted me to, or anybody wanted to highlight that I missed? Greg? Just kidding.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I own this coffee house here at the place, and I've been needing some more help in trying to So we're just trying to create this as a creative space. And we're also the winners of, quote unquote winners or whatever, people who will be commissioned are going to be announced at the Cell to Cell event, which we're redoing the Cell to Cell, which was done last year, which is totally awesome. And that'll be in January. So that more information about that, but that's also going to be a fundraiser to actually paint the space. So if you come to that, then we can paint and make it pretty and do art.
Cool. Thanks, Meg.
Hey, I'm Craig, and I've been doing a lot of work with the Interfaith Group with Occupy Philadelphia. And one of the ways that we're attempting to support the Occupy movement is that some of y'all have heard of Camp Liberty, which is the group of folks currently without housing that were living on the Conrail property, and then they got moved, and so they've been going through all this. But one thing that the Interfaith Group is trying to do is we have these buttons, and they just say Camp Liberty, have a little modest Christmas tree on them. And what we're doing is we're trying to give these away for a bus token. So if you'd like to do that, I would be happy to give you one tonight. Or if you don't have a bus token, $2 would suffice as well, and we'll go purchase them. So you can just find me here, Steve.
Cool. Thank you.
There's a bag of organic, or at least locally grown chipotle peppers. I believe they're organic, and as good of a radishes as you've ever had. The radishes need to be washed. I didn't want to wash them so they would be wet. But they got dirt on them, but that's why they grew in the soil. In a black bag, and I didn't put any plastic bags down there, but I have some in my van, which I'm currently living out of across the street as a freezing bag. Please take them. They're great. Chipotle peppers and radishes right there.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, they are really good, but they're kind of a little spicy too. I rubbed my eye after and it hurt.
Oh, no.
But it tastes so good. It was a little spicy, but really good. It's so good. Yeah, it's true. It doesn't feel good in the eye. Okay, so Eric is going to come up and lead us in a solidarity prayer about Philabundance before Greg and the team lead us in a closing verse of our special Advent song.